once more under the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of the second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
And I didn't say the last name.
There. Okay, let's try this. Starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
I did it.
You're a little slow on that, a little slow on the uptake.
People have been telling me I'm a little slow on the uptake my whole life.
Well, people have told me that I'm trying. I'm very trying. But that is no excuse. Anyway, telephone number to call in here, 254-773-1400, or you can call 254-773-1400 if you're a little older like I am.
All right. And I'm just reading a study that was out of the University of Chicago. Dr. Martinez, Lewis R. Martinez, University of Chicago. And he's been doing a study for quite some time looking at satellite data. What does that have to do with the economy?
I'm sure it has something, or you wouldn't be talking about it.
Right. He's looking at pictures of the nighttime world.
It's getting brighter.
Yes, it is getting brighter. He's using the amount of new light in comparison to older pictures over time to compare to GDP growth. And in much of the well-regulated economic world, by well-regulated, I mean that you're not allowed to come out and make a claim that is false about your company on a regular basis. You either get sued or the government cracks down on you. Over time, people still do it, but it's a lot less in these well-regulated areas. Just ask Wells Fargo. They've had some issues with that. Okay, so what he's found in his studies, is that there's this pretty universal trend in a growing economy. You can look
to increase light pollution.
Right. If you look at the amount of light that's coming off of these countries at nighttime over a period of time, you get a very, very accurate GDP growth rate out of just the increase in light. And in the process, discovered that Russia and China and Iran and a lot of the dictatorships in the world are lying about their GDP growth by between 15 and 20% of their GDP. That's not something that's too surprising. We knew that China has been inflating its GDP numbers for a long, long time. But yeah, that says something that you can measure it directly. One of the difficulties in measuring the economy of China is that the only data that you can get is from the government of China. And the government of China has an agenda. They want to see a certain growth rate.
And if you were a private company, we have a lot of private companies in the United States who are in the business of estimating our GDP. And if you were to try to do that in China, you'd wind up in prison for espionage.
Yeah, and here's one of the things. And this, it sounded like sort of like there's a grand conspiracy at the uppermost level of the Chinese government.
There is.
There is, but the grandest part of that conspiracy has nothing to do with the upper part of the Chinese government. Down at the mayoral level, at the mayors and governors of the different areas of China, they have goals that they're required to meet, or they may lose their job and, in some cases, their lives. So they have an incentive to inflate the numbers that they're reporting.
You know, the way they do the GDP is the local Communist Party chief.
Yeah.
Estimates his local GDP, and he passes it up to the regional party
chief,
who passes his
the mayoral level is that local chief,
and so the issue is, it's kind of like, okay, the Republicans are in power, so the Republican representative in each community or district in the United States would estimate the GDP of that community or district. And then they would pass it up to the state Republican Party chiefs.
The difference, though, is in a two-party system, or a party that's allowed to have an independent party.
No, we would just ignore the Democrats' estimates.
They would come out and say, hey, look, here's proof they're lying. In China, if you come out and you say, hey, look, there's proof they're, I'm going to jail. That's what happens.
Yeah,
you don't ever finish the sentence. Well, you'll finish your prison sentence.
That's
an incomplete sentence. It goes on forever.
Let me throw a non-paid, non-political announcement here.
Oh yes,
the Rotary Club
Q on May
of Salado is sponsoring something, and the money goes to things like scholarships for high school students and so on. Q on Main, which is there's 12 barbecue setups on Main Street.
In Salado.
And if you go to either the community center in Salado, which is on Main Street, it's the big red brick building towards the center of town, or at the corner of right at Royal and Main Street, which is down where the Stagecoach Inn is, there's another place. You can buy a wristband and you get a ballot. And if you go visit all 12 barbecues, and you'll be forced to sample their barbecue.
Oh, my.
And then vote on how you think it is, and then you turn that thing back in, you will be, and I don't know how many people are actually going to go to all 12, because, I mean, it would be really hard to eat that much barbecue.
Well, then at the end of all of this, at 4 o'clock, there's a farmer's market the Barrow Brewery.
But you go to these 12 places, and you sample their barbecue, and then you vote on it, and you turn your card back in. There'll be a drawing where they'll give away a smoker, and the second prize will be a Kendra Scott necklace.
And by smoker, you do not mean someone that has lung cancer. You mean
the thing
that treats meat very, right. very well so that the taste is
excellent. Yeah. So
amazing.
If you're wondering what you could do today that would be interesting, Salado is clearly the place to go if you like barbecue.
We are prejudiced. We will tell you that. We live in Salado, but the reason why we live in Salado is because we were pre-prejudiced, so we were pre-prejudiced. And that's why we live there. We think Salado's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and there are no stoplights in Salado. That should help you. But anyway, it's an excellent opportunity. If you want to walk, you can walk to all 12 of them, and you can get some exercise to
after
work off
the
that.
12th one, you may have trouble walking
well,
back.
Well, now, the thing is, you go to the Barrow Brewery.
Yeah, there you go. You
afterwards
just sit
for the farmer's
for the
market
rest of
and
the
you
time.
Drink some beer.
Drink some beer, have some veggies,
yeah,
and that will help you
right.
walk back to your
start
car.
Start at the Barrow Brewery, park in that area, and then make the loop and hit all 12 barbecue joints.
And head back and hit them again on the way back.
And, well, you hit them on one side going up and on the other side coming back, and then you drink some beer, and then you call 911.
But it does sound like a lot of fun. So
and it's something.
It's a good Memorial Day weekend.
It is a good thing to do on the weekend, and the good thing about it is...
if you get too hot from doing this, you can just fall into the springs and cool off.
Your $10 will be supporting a very, very good cause. Nobody's making big bucks on this except that the Salado Club in the Salado Rotary Club is sponsoring this, and they're trying to raise money to do things that they do for the community and for scholarships for high school students and things like that. So the Q on Main Street is the thing to do. Go get yourself a wristband and walk around Salado and eat stuff.
That's a good plug for barbecue.
Yeah. Well, barbecue
the Q on Main.
Barbecue is good. Anyway. On another subject,
besides barbecue or the light on planet Earth.
Yeah. The light on planet Earth, I think is very irritating. I don't like light pollution because I'm an astrophotographer. But,
yeah. Since it blocks out the light in the sky. I think those stars are producing light pollution up there. Whew, man.
I don't think so.
They are. They're polluting their entire region. It's hard to see other stars.
It is.
Yeah, if you're on a planet around another star system, you have to wait till you're occluded from that star in order to see anything. That's huge light pollution.
I'm not on a planet around another star.
I think pollution is a relative term.
Anyway, interesting things about the underlying economy, and in the light of all the other stuff that we talk about, it's easy to forget the fact that business investment, for example, is up. Technically, the raw number for April went down 1.7%.
Let's cook that number.
But no, let's you don't have
you want to leave it raw.
I'm gonna leave it like it is.
No cooking the books. Okay.
If we take out civilian aircraft, which shoots up and down every month, and we just say
literally that's how they take off and land.
Yeah.
Shoot up and down.
We actually see that they're running up about. It's actually rose at about 1% from. March to April, business investment. Now, that is a lot because it would be 12% in a year. It is, that's the granular area where some important stuff is going on. And the analysis on this says that the tax law change that allows businesses to write off something they buy this year rather than writing it off over a seven-year period for tax purposes is beginning to take effect. We're beginning to see a significant increase in business investment. And that's very important. That is a real big positive.
Positive for the economy.
That, right.
Major positive.
It hopefully will increase productivity down the road, which we've not seen much of. We've seen very little productivity growth. Hiring is still, we're still running about 3.9% unemployment, which is the second or third lowest we've ever had since we've been tracking these things. It's the lowest we've had since the year 2000.
And it was only in a very short period there in 2000,
right,
when it was just a couple of months that it was that low.
The other times before that, when we've gotten lower, every one of those times, it has actually dropped down to 3.1 on about three occasions, and once it got down into the twos for a very short period of time. But in each of those cases, we had major wars going on, so that a lot of people were employed dying or killing other people.
Yeah.
And we don't have that going on right now.
We would kind of prefer not to go that
right.
route for the full employment method. We like to have a safe workforce environment
possible. We are literally sitting at as low a peacetime unemployment rate as the United States has seen since we've been keeping records on these things. So the economy, as a matter of fact, an interesting point, the number of unemployed people and the number of job openings in the United States almost perfectly match at this point. Now, there's a
they're
problem.
Not in the same places.
Well,
that's the thing.
Some of them are even in the same places. The skill set is the differential.
Yeah.
And we have a critical shortage of low-skilled, but we do have a critical shortage of low-skilled workers.
Which means that if you are out of a job right now, all you have to do is agree to pick tomatoes or
drive a truck.
Drive a truck.
In other words, basically, you have to
you
be willing to
get a job. You will get a job if you really want it.
Well, I don't know. Some people probably couldn't qualify to drive a truck. But
you have to do some training for that.
You have to do some training, and you have to be able to see and hear and be fully functional and pass drug tests.
Yeah, that's the other piece.
And be willing to be away from home. But the point is that the economy is running pretty much at full tilt. Can we improve on this? Yes, through automation and productivity, but not at a huge rate of speed.
Yeah.
And so in the midst of talking about the dangers of the tariffs and the dangers of the deficit, and we want to talk about that a little bit, the long-term dangers are there and the threats are there. But in the short term, probably for the next year, year and a half, the United States economy is running as well as I have ever seen it in 35 years of watching
it. To hear us on this radio program for very long, you'd think things are really, really horrible. But we tend to get like this when things are going well so that people don't forget that you have to keep doing it correctly when it's running well.
When things are running well,
when that's dangerous.
That's when we should be concerned about what's going to cause it to stop running well. And we have a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hi. Guys, I have listened to you for quite a few years now.
I'm sorry.
Too bad. Your IQ has probably fallen significantly during that time period.
And it seems like every other week you guys talk about the lack thereof of truck drivers.
Yep.
Did a truck driver hurt you when you're in a past life or something, man?
No. Are you a truck driver?
I want to tell you guys the reason why we have a lack of truckers.
Okay.
And all those people out there in listening land, I'm telling you, they will know this. The juice is just not worth the squeeze anymore. In the 70s, we made a good, if we worked really hard, we could make 70 grand a year, but that was back when you could buy a house for 12.5. There was a lot less regulation.
Uh-huh. I know that's a problem. The digital logbooks are really causing people a lot of pain.
Oh, brother, the digital logbooks are great. See, you got it just totally turned around.
Well, I've had truck drivers, people who have decided not to drive trucks anymore.
Because they were keeping three logbooks.
Because what they is they were driving lots of extra hours at very high speeds and knew how to get around the system, and now they can't get around the system anymore, so they quit driving trucks.
That's correct. I've driven on both systems, okay?
Uh-huh.
And I made more money when I was on the data log.
Okay.
And there's a lot of benefits for it. One is I never, ever got an inspection of my logbooks when I was doing GPS logging.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because the police can't catch you in a lie, so they can't give you that $990 ticket with their gun in for. So I mean, I made more money.
So are you not driving trucks anymore?
No, I'm disabled now.
Okay.
I can't drive a truck. But the point is that the people in control of the Department of Transportation don't know what they're doing. They're politicians. What we need is a group of about 50 or 100 truckers that have been doing it for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you can add in the mix pilots and engineers and even brokers, bus drivers that have been doing it for 20 years and who don't make and don't draw a check off of the taxpayer. So they have no vested interest in politics.
So what do you think is causing? So what you're saying is truckers are not paid enough.
They are not paid enough. Their work environment is terrible. It's probably the third most dangerous job in the world.
I would argue with that.
Oh,
statistically,
okay.
The number of people who are disabled or die while driving trucks is really not that high compared with a lot of other work.
It is dangerous in the disability sense. It's dangerous in the
I was referring to the job of driver in general.
No, it's been getting safer and safer and safer. There's a lot of other jobs,
good.
some of which I have done. You know, flying helicopters is more dangerous than driving trucks. I hate to tell you this.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay. I understand that it's true.
Okay.
But then again, it's safer in one regard. I mean,
it's uncomfortable.
It's uncomfortable. With driving a truck, I could teach a monkey how to drive a truck. But what I could not do is teach him how to read, and I can't teach somebody how to make up with their wife when they're gone for 6 weeks out of a time.
You know, and we mentioned that the issue is you have to be the demand of being gone a lot. Now, there's a real – if you ever decide since you're disabled and don't have anything else to do, you want to study economics – one of the great conundrums that's going on around the world today, and including its major effect is in Japan right now, is something called the Phillips curve doesn't seem to be working. The Phillips curve says once there is a job shortage, pay will go up, and it will go up faster and faster as there's competition for workers. What we've seen
not happened with the truckers.
It is not happening anywhere in the United States. That's the problem. Now, plumbers
right.
seem
plumbers and electricians.
Plumbers and electricians it's starting to happen for, but even there it's not as happening as fast as it did in the 1990s. And there's a lot of question as to why. And you know, it's one of those things where it could be just lagged. It could be that a year from now truckers will be making a lot more money, but the issue is people are not willing to pay more money for the finished product, a good at the store, Walmart
Correct.
Or wherever. And if you start raising the price that truckers get paid, then you back up to the fact that you have to start raising the price of shipping the goods, which means that the prices at Walmart start to go up. So there's this thing left over from the deflationary period around 2008, 9, and 10. That people have this expectation of you're coming down in price when they can bargain down in price, you know, doing the deal. And
it's hard, though. I guess what I was trying to say, it's hard to put a price on losing track of your friends, losing your
sure.
girlfriends, losing your wife,
right.
losing track of your church. I mean, having no church life, no social life.
But I think
that's hard to put a price on.
It is, but I also think that one of the reasons is up until fairly recently, well, as recently as a couple of months ago, a month or so ago, people were coming out of retirement who used to be truckers and driving trucks. So the benefits and the pay have gone up from what they were in the not too far distant past because you're having people who quit being truckers, who retired, who are coming back into the market. Now, once that gets exhausted, there's a really substantial number of trucks. I don't remember the exact number, 40,000 new trucks on order, under construction right now, 18-wheelers. We will need 40,000 more drivers to drive them. And at that point, I think we're approaching the point, we may see it this year or next year, when the wages for doing things that that have been flat since the Great Recession will start to rise. And at that point, we'll see, I think, a recovery towards those relatively high incomes, and we'll start to get inflation. You know, back when you were talking about, when were you driving and you could make $70,000 a year, what year was that?
Oh, that was 1975, 1976.
Okay. And what followed that in the way of inflation? Do you remember?
That was the gas price. That was the gas hike.
No, it's not the gas hike. I'm talking about the fact that the wages started to go up in truckers. And I'm actually have studied this. You asked me about trucking. I've actually studied this.
Well, so I was making 20 cents a mile back then, and I made just as much money as I made when I was in.
Sure.
That's because we had double-digit inflation
but
at that point.
But what happened was those wage increases, that is a wage increase in effect, began to mushroom through the system, and by 1980 or 82, we had 12% inflation.
We had this, looking at FreddieMac.com, October 9th of 1981, the average 30-year mortgage interest rate was 18.6%.
And now it's 4%.
Crazy.
4.5%.
So the point is that people look back and see their wages going up very nicely in the late 70s and early 80s, and they say, why can't that happen again? Well,
there was a lot of inflation.
What we don't get is the fact that there was double-digit inflation going on, and the double-digit inflation was going on because the economy got overheated and because wages were going up, and as people had more money, they would be willing to pay more for a shortage of things that were out there. And by the way, there was a severe truck driver shortage about the same time that you saw the wages go up,
right,
just before
right.
that. That's the last time we
I
had
a
severe
a
truck driver shortage.
For you, though.
What's that?
I do have a solution. You're going to need more drivers, and it's going to be a lot more painful to be a driver to make things more fluid in the transportation industry. But there needs to be more team drivers.
Yeah, frankly,
that's the difficulty, is that it is more difficult to get teen drivers to do it, because a teen driver looks up and sees that Tesla has back orders on its truck that drives itself, and that Mercedes and all
It'll
the other
get to that point, guys. I hate to tell you that the driverless trucks are always going to have somebody there in the truck. I mean, you can call them an attendant, you can call them a bookkeeper or whatever, but somebody's going to have to run the bills, somebody's going to have to fuel the truck, somebody's going to have to be there. If the truck breaks down on the side of the road and it's not turned upside down somewhere.
Yeah, you're completely correct. But do you know what the drivers for the driverless cars testing was really illustrated? The one that actually where the Uber car hit the pedestrian, the driver was being paid minimum wage.
Yeah, you know what? I would after putting 2.5 million miles on the road, after training about 100 drivers myself, I would have been paid more money if they would have paid me minimum wage from the time I left the house to the time I got back to my house.
Yep. And then
I would have made more money.
I think what you're going to see, like I said, is that the wages for truckers are going to go up. They haven't yet.
But the point is,
we still got to have more truckers, and
right.
we don't.
Yeah, and that's the hard thing, is that when a teenager looks at it and says it's going to be driving itself, they don't want to get into a career path that they know has a short term on it. They're not going to get the higher pay per mile if the truck is driving itself. And at some point, it's not going to be immediate, but at some point, there won't be a person in that truck at all.
I want to know how they're going to back the truck into a dock. I want to know how a driverless truck is going to bump a dock.
Okay, this is an easy one to answer.
Yeah, that is an easy one.
The trailer and the tractor combine, the engine for the whole trailer is on the bottom of the trailer. The front and the back both can go into the dock. The limitations of person in the front of it. You can't get cargo out through the cab. Well, if there's no cab, there's no backing into a dock, it just pulls right into it.
So you're saying you pull out, you unhook from the trailer.
Yeah, Volvo.
No, it's not a trailer. The trailer's engine is the trailer. It's on the trailer.
Volvo has what they call truck units that will self-dock. They will self-back in and dock.
Yeah, and wow. So that's where we're going, and it's not going to be immediate. It's going to be, you know, probably more than a decade away before that's the norm, and more than a decade. But we're going to start to see it trickle in, and then at some point the floodgates are going to open, and that's just going to be the way it goes.
You know, it used to take 4 people minimum to take a train across the United States. How many does it take now?
1, and that's only sort of necessary.
Yeah,
to have the one.
One
they're just
guy,
there to keep the logbooks.
There's now one person runs the train.
And at some point, and there are some trains where there are no people on board.
Yeah,
there are no people doing that train.
Yeah, the commuter trains often don't have anybody. Matter of fact, it's safer not to have a train driver.
So, you know, at some point it's going to be fixed. What we're talking about as a bottleneck for today's economy, number one, we need more truck drivers. We think that's an area that we are bottlenecked. We cannot grow fast enough unless we have more truck drivers now. But it's a huge sacrifice on the truck driver. They've got to be away from their house.
Yes.
They've got to be away from their family. They've got to work really crazy hours with not good diet on the way. And then in the middle of all of that, they've got to know that their career has an end point that is not their choice.
There's also some other things. One, you have no social net. Another thing, you have no church family out on the road.
Yeah. We actually know truck drivers quite well, and we understand truck driving and truck drivers, and so we don't have any offense.
Are probably the ones that go postal. Those are the ones.
Postal truck drivers. Those are different.
Right. Yeah, you get that right.
I see them on the highway all the time.
See, truck drivers have to experience. These dispatchers that have a disease called the thousand-mile-itis.
Right.
And you know what that is?
No. What is that?
See, whenever you get 1,000 miles away from that dispatcher, he thinks he can treat you any old way he wants to. And it goes, and it happens that way everywhere, every truck place I've ever worked.
Yep. All right, thank you for calling.
We've got to play some commercials. We appreciate the call. We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you would like to join our conversation, the phone number to call in here is 254-773-1400. We'll be back.
And don't forget about the queue on Main in Salado. You get barbecue, go buy a $10 band at the community center and go to 12 different places and get all the barbecue you want. Bye-bye. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. We got it right that time.
Yeah, we can say our names. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
Telephone number in here remains 254-773-1400 if today is the 26th of May 2018. And we have a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Really enjoy your show all the time. But in regards to that commercial that you say you don't endorse, I couldn't help but Google just to see the guy's name and so forth. And it's interesting that his show stopped in 2009. So if he's so successful, why has he been on it for 10 years?
He's extremely successful selling his package to people so they can go broke.
Exactly. Well, anyway.
And that little blurb at the beginning where he goes, blah, 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 that says, hey, if you take this thing and you do it, you'll go broke.
Well, the fast thing is says performance is based on effort.
That's one of the things, but the one at the beginning says...
Yeah, so what that really means is that if you fail in any way, they can say, well, it was based on your effort.
It's your fault.
You need to spend 25 hours a day doing this, and you obviously didn't read that in the fine print.
Yes, and you need to pay us a lot of money to know how to flip houses. Now, actually, we have tornadoes in Texas that'll do it for free.
Now, having said that... I will tell you this. It is possible to make a great deal of money taking a house, putting money into that house, making it more available to the market immediately, doing things that other people don't want to do to the house, and then selling it at a profit. That is a very reasonable thing. What he said in the ad that scares the pants off of me and should scare the pants off of anybody else is that use other people's money. whoa, well, there's a cost associated with using other people's money, and it does not work long term.
Hey, Jared Kushner used other people's money to buy 666 whatever Broadway.
Okay.
The building to buy that. And uh-huh. Now he's having to renegotiate the deal or he'll wind up declaring bankruptcy.
Right. There are issues. It doesn't matter the size of the debt. If you have an issue where you look at it long term and you say, I do not have the ability to pay this, were the reason why I got the debt to stop working. Well, then you need to look and say, okay, yeah. What would keep the reason why you got the debt from working in the case of houses? In the Temple area, if you look at the number of houses being constructed right now and the number of new houses sold in the last year, you will find that existing home prices are likely to go down into the foreseeable future because there are new houses available. And when you have a lot of new houses coming on the market, the house prices are going to go down. What we've seen even in Salado, Salado's kind of a bed and breakfast retreat type place, which has a kind of a Goldilocks real estate rumor about it. It's not true. In the summer is when you see the peak in prices. Well, we're running into the summer here, and prices are dropping in Salado. Which says something. It means that we're reaching saturation with the new houses coming on the market. You can still make money flipping houses, but you better do it professionally. You better do it with the time involved that it takes. A lot of people that flip houses think, I've got my day job. I'm going to buy this house and I'm going to repaint it and I'm going to sell it for a $50,000 profit. And then the painting takes a lot longer than they expected and they wind up selling it for the same price or a little bit less than they bought it for with all that time being wasted. And that's kind of a semi-good case scenario. There are, as I said, ways of doing this properly. Flip This House was taken off of A&E in 2009, which was the depths of the recession because it didn't work at that point.
It stopped working a long time ago.
The only reason why it worked leading to the recession is because people were buying four or five houses to try to flip them, which caused everybody that was doing the flipping to be able to sell it to another flipper until the last flipper was stuck on a dolphin and went out to sea.
Right. Well, thanks for calling.
Well, and thanks for doing the show.
Yeah, right. Appreciate the call.
Let's see. One of the – something about this week –
It started with a Sunday this week. It was just
this week is an interesting week. Of course, the S&P 500 is up 0.31%. The Dow is up 0.15%. And you say, okay, it didn't go up very much, and yet U.S. companies are doing really, really well. Well, you know what happened this week that you missed?
Did I miss? I think I missed a lot this week. What happened?
President Donald Trump suggested a trade war with China was on hold. So
okay.
Stocks went up.
Well, no.
No.
Mnuchin did.
Well, okay.
So the Treasury Secretary suggested.
Later, he ordered administration to explore penalties on imported automobiles. Stock market went down. But this is the point. He also canceled talks with North Korea. Italy's bond market, now you probably missed this. Italy's bond market melted down following the emergence of a the equivalent of a collective group of people called the Five Star that basically are similar to Donald Trump, and they basically want to break ties with the rest of Europe.
More like Maduro in Venezuela than Donald Trump.
They want populists to
an extreme.
They want to give lots of money to people and cut taxes, which means that Italy would become Greece.
Yeah. Well, not literally. Greece would still be a separate country, now, but they would both have basket cases.
Meanwhile, Turkey is headed towards internal bankruptcy.
Yeah,
and is about to collapse. Italy's economy, but then in the midst of all this, right now, Spain doesn't have a government and is broke.
It has been without a government for quite some time at this point.
Really? I thought that. No, they've had a government. It's just that they had a vote of no confidence on their prime minister, which means he's out, but they haven't got a new one in.
The reason why I say quite some time, the no confidence vote came after them not being able to do anything in their government. So no confidence was just the statement at the end of it.
And Spain is also one of those places that's being kept alive on a fiction and with double-digit unemployment, like Italy has double-digit unemployment. And as a result, during this week, it became apparent that the euro crisis that began in 2009 ain't over.
It's still going strong.
It's important to remember, and the European stock market went down. The euro, which was at 125 to the dollar, is now at 116. Not because the dollar went up, but because the euro went down. This is the kind of stuff that 4 years ago would have been big headlines and caused major moves in the market.
Right.
But
now,
we are so fixated on the president and his tweets and on relationships with a country that we don't have any economic ties to whatsoever, North Korea.
Right.
That we basically don't notice.
And part of that is good because the market's reaction and the panicked kind of human reaction to Greece and to Italy was over the top. There were some dangers associated with them in the past. They're still there. They haven't gone away. Greece is still technically in default. Puerto Rico is still technically in default. Illinois is still right on the edge of being in default. There's still a lot of stuff out there that we're missing for the good news, which is kind of the opposite of what we saw over the last decade. So keep in mind, when people have commented on this to us lately, at least to me, I don't know if you've heard it, you guys used to be the perennial optimist. What's going on? It's depressing listening to your program these days. In the depths of a recession, when every bit of news in the world is negative, you heard us being positive. Well, now we're at roaring good times in the economy. And if you look at the news, you're going to see lots of good news out there about the economy. The bad news has to do with trade wars or with negotiating with North Korea. It could be good news. It could be bad news. What you're not seeing is the focus on real weaknesses that was there before. There was so much focus on the real weakness that it made these small weaknesses look huge. Well, now we're not looking at the small weaknesses because there's a lot of noise coming out of the White House. Well, that's in some ways very good. It prolongs the confidence in the economy. It allows us to have good growth. But I think the people that listen to this program, by and large, are decision makers for business. And you don't make good decisions when you're perennially pessimistic. You also don't make good decisions when you're optimistic. Get pragmatic. How, when, why? Important information to have. Don't go with the news media's gut reaction. Look down into it. Say there's still negative news. There's still positive news. We've got good growth in the economy. The economy's doing fantastically well. We've been talking about long-term issues that we need to fix, whether that's education or trade or the medical side of things. Those are all vital and important. Right now we have the ability to change them, but it's not a crisis, so we probably won't.
One of the things that we often warn about is when things are too good. For example, you may not have heard us talk too much about it. We didn't get into it too much, but there was something called Master Limited Partnerships that came out a few years ago, and they basically are tremendously tax advantaged, and they provide a tremendous amount of income, and they seem like the ideal solution. We didn't use them because they were too good, and that sounds a little strange. Turns out that now, because of the tax law change,
they're not too good anymore.
The Master Limited Partnerships, still generating nice income, are being converted to corporate shares in the corporation that is running the partnership, and you don't get a say in whether they do or not. And when it happens, you get to pay the taxes for all those years that you didn't pay taxes before.
Right. You'll get to do it at a lower rate, but you'll do it on the whole amount.
And it is making people very, very unhappy. And they, any time that something is doing something that is going to have a bad outcome, we try to warn you about it so you stay away from it. Right now, We certainly like the fact that the market is up. We certainly, well, it's not up this year. We certainly like the fact that we had a big run-up in the market last year because it raises this and that and the other. But one of the things we're deeply concerned about, and this is a serious point, is the economy beginning this year is overstimulated. And it's kind of like going on a big-time caffeine high. You're going to come down on the tail end. And it's a matter of being prepared for the fact that you're going to come down, having a strategy for what you do when things come down. For instance, here I give you a very good parallel. I get psyched up for this radio program. I get up early in the morning. Jay gets up early in the morning. We do a lot of research on Saturday mornings because a lot of the information doesn't come out until Saturday morning that we talk about on the radio program. We are fired up with a lot of, at least I am, with a lot of adrenaline while we're in here. And we say
just,
once more
I
into the breach.
Sleep. I just sleep the whole time.
When
I'm
we
not
say once more
all.
Into the breach, I'm at least quite serious about that because I realize that for 2 hours we're going to be talking to phone balls and we could say something that once we say it, we can never take it back. And it'll be a screw up that we'll never forget because we'll get hammered for it for the next 40 years, presuming we live that long. I'm kind of hyped up on adrenaline the whole time here. And let me tell you what I do. I just plan on the fact I'm going to, early on Saturday afternoon, Jeff McClure is going to have a downer.
He's going to take a nap.
And I'm going to go get something to eat, and I'm going to take a nap because otherwise I won't be worth shooting for the rest of the day. And it's one of those things that we don't like to be pessimistic about the economy. We don't like to be politically oriented in any way, but when we see things like a tax cut that the people who did it admitted they wanted to juice the economy for 2018 and didn't care what happened beyond that because they wanted to juice the economy for 2018, so the Republicans who passed the bill...
That's called short-sighted.
...could keep control of the House of Representatives. And the fact... one of the things that amazes me, I'll just be flat-out astonished here... Every economist, and all they have to do is ask any economist, they will tell you, you're going to pay for this in 2020.
Yeah.
It's going to blow up in 2020 if you juice it in 2018.
You do it, and this is the consequence. So when we remind you of that, it's more like being a weatherman or just a meteorologist saying, the storm's coming, and you better prepare. Take advantage of the good weather that you have right now. Prepare for the storm that's coming. And that should be true in any good weather. You should be prepared for a storm that's coming, even if it's not predicted. I've got another piece of... It's a segue here.
You got another pizza?
We got another piece here.
Let me do another thing on the...
Oh, yeah.
The Q on Main Street. If you haven't heard this before, if you have, it's still worth hearing again. There's 12 barbecue smokers set up on Main Street in Salado. And if you go to the community center or at the cross at the intersection of Royal and Main right there at the Stagecoach Inn, you can buy a wristband and you can go to any of those. Well, we want you to go to all 12 barbecue smoker places and sample their food and vote on them. If you will pay $10 and by the under 12, by the way, the kids are free on this. But if you pay $10 for a wristband and then you turn in your ballot after forcing yourself to sample 10 different barbecue places, boy, that's hard, then you get put into a drawing and you'll get either a smoker or a Kendra Scott necklace if you win. There'll be two prizes in the drawing. And your money goes for a very, very good cause. It goes to support. It goes to charities and good stuff supported by the Salado Rotary Club. So that's going on all day today, and there's other stuff. There's a farmer's market at 4 o'clock in Salado at the Barrow Brewery, which means you can drink beer, eat barbecue, and buy good wholesome food. So you can buy health food while eating barbecue and drinking beer.
It's great. You've got the greatness of all options on the
table.
Yeah. All right. So Merrill Lynch.
Finner and Smith.
No longer though.
No, it's right. It's Merrill Lynch, Bank of America.
Bank of America, Merrill Lynch.
It's Bank of America branch is Merrill Lynch.
If you have accounts with Merrill Lynch, expect some changes in the near future. The changes are not going to be on your account. You may get some calls from your broker, from whatever they're calling themselves, whether it's financial advisor or broker or whatever it is.
Fiscal consultant.
Expect the call because it's going to start happening. Expect to be pushed with incentives or without towards Bank of America products. Why am I saying this? Because Merrill Lynch has just been told by Bank of America that it needs to change its compensation to the brokers. The brokers will be compensated in part by how much business they're sending over to Bank of America.
How much stuff they sell from Bank of America.
Right. If you're setting up new accounts at Merrill Lynch, expect to be strongly encouraged to set up stuff at Bank of America. Just expect that to happen. They've changed the – and here's the dangerous part and why you should expect it to come at – in certain cases in high energy. They're doing it retroactively, which means starting next month, some brokers are going to get not just less money, but they're going to get money clawed back from them on commissions that they already earned on accounts that they didn't sell enough Bank of America products. So when we talk about conflicts of interest, when we talk about fiduciary, this is a really good example of a non-fiduciary sales situation. Most customers are not going to know why it is that they're suddenly the center of attention for the broker that's not been paying too much attention to them. This is why, because the broker is suddenly going to stop getting paid money that he was or she was being paid before and may have money that was already paid to them go back to Bank of America through Merrill Lynch. So just be aware. It's
Wells Fargo's been doing that for some time.
Yeah,
right?
And that's part of the reason why Bank of America is picking this up, because they're seeing the underlying, you know, Wells Fargo's had some real issues in that they've had scandal after scandal after scandal, which has affected their earnings. But if you take even a passing look at their books, you'll see that they have set up some overall profit wins by encouraging brokers to highly recommend banking products at the bank at Wells Fargo. So Bank of America is saying, hey, we can do that too, and we don't have all the scandals. Well, the scandals follow this. If people are higher energy pushing the stuff, if you're taking their pay away without it, expect people to get signed up that didn't sign up. Just put that on your reminder to yourself. Expect some scandals to come out of this.
Okay, I got to say I told you so here and pat ourselves on the back a little bit. At the beginning of the year, we warned that interest rates are headed up.
Yeah.
With the tax cut, the overheating the economy, interest rates are going to head up. Corporate bonds are going to get – bonds in general are going to get beat up. Investors holding corporate bonds with investment-grade ratings, this is from the Wall Street Journal, have lost 3.8% by the end of last week on average.
Ouch.
And so the market is up 1.75, and you say, well, that's not – or 1.7-something, and that's 1.78. That's not good. Yeah, but if you had a – which nobody does, of course – an average or median – portfolio of investment grade corporate bonds, you have lost 3.8% so far this year. And that is probably going to start to
pinch,
start to grind in there and probably get worse into the future. So fair warning, as interest rates rise, bonds fall. And we talked about the fact that the 10-year treasury has risen from 1 point something 18 months ago to just under 3% at the end of this last week.
Yeah, and we are about out of time for this week. We appreciate those of you that actually listened. If you didn't listen, then you can't hear us now. if you did listen, we appreciate it. Hope that you are taking some things from this program that you can use in the rest of your life and even beyond the triviality of what's going on.
The barbecue on the queue.
Yeah, that's a good one you can use right away. Business decisions hopefully are going well. If you would like to talk to us in person, we do give advice to people with high net worth, fiduciary investment advice. To reach us, we've got voicemail waiting during the weekend and real live people during the week. Locally, the number is
254-947-1111. That's 254-947-1111.
He's got to repeat
one,
that just
one,
in case.
1-1-1. I like that.
You can reach that number toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, and read our newsletter, listen to podcasts of this episode and others. You can email us directly, jeff at tpwc.com or jake at tpwc.com. Until next week.